Consider how many times a day you are presented with a truth. Think about how in many of those instances, it is claimed to be backed up by empirical evidence, thereby making it a scientific truth. The positivist's claim is that anything which cannot be proven with empirical evidence should be deemed incorrect or dismissed as mere subjective experience. Adherence to the scientific method was considered the only way objective knowledge could be produced. Through the scientific method, science could be free of values, ideology, or political manipulation. The scientist is not seen as a producer of knowledge, rather, as a neutral messenger who possesses the tools which can access knowledge.
There are many hypotheses in science which are wrong. That's perfectly right. It's the aperture to finding out what's right. Science is a self-correcting process. To be accepted, new ideas must survive the most rigorous standards of evidence and scrutiny. The worst aspect of the Velikovsky affair is not that many of his ideas were wrong or silly or in gross contradiction to the facts. Rather, the worst aspect is that some scientists attempted to suppress Velikovsky's ideas.
Carl Sagan makes a good point in saying that sometimes the scientific community will suppress ideas when doing so will prevent them from having to admit that their hypotheses and their theories are wrong. But sometimes members of the scientific community really want to be right about something, or the politicians want them to be right about something, or corporations want them to be right about something. When knowledge is claimed to be objective, the people reporting the knowledge are freed of any moral charge or of holding prejudice or bias. The authority and neutrality of science is exactly why it can get abused to advance certain ideas, such as justifying beliefs in racial superiority or inferiority. This was common in early anthropology and race biological studies. Think of Joseph Arthur de Gobineau, the aristocrat who developed the notorious theory of the Aryan master race. He wrote it in his book called An Essay on the Inequality of the Human Races. He emphasized a strong relationship between race and culture, and so he claimed that the white race was superior to all races. In the 20th century, these kinds of ideas were defended by using Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. It was actually Darwin's cousin which first applied the theory of evolution to society. His name was Francis Galton. He coined the term eugenics, which he defined as the study of all agencies under human control which can improve or impair the racial quality of future generations. Galton's ideas about eugenics were adopted by Hermann Lundborg, a physical anthropologist who in 1922 founded the Swedish Institute for Race Biology. He persuaded the Swedish government and the Swedish people about the importance of saving the Nordic race from degeneration. He asserted that by studying and classifying the inhabitants of Sweden into racial categories, they could improve their knowledge of which citizens should reproduce and which should not. He was given support to study inhabitants all over Sweden by logging their physical characteristics, such as skin color, skull shapes, and other facial features, as well as their occupation and social status. Lundborg really believed that he could use these physical characteristics to prove to people that they were signs of lower mental capacity or lower social standing or criminality. And this line of logic is not just a dark chapter in human history. It is still used today in many public debates. Using the genetic difference argument is so pervasive that even the former president of Harvard University, Lawrence Summers, brought it up at a panel discussion. He said, "What's up with chicks and science?" Famous astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson responded with a crushing argument which denounces any claim that biology alone can serve to explain social inequalities.
Does anyone want to field maybe if there are genetic differences between men and women that explain why more men are in science? Anyone want to touch that?
I've never been female. But I have been black my whole life. And so let me perhaps offer some insight. When I look at throughout my life, I've known that I wanted to do astrophysics since I was 9 years old, a first visit to the Hayden Planetarium. I was a little younger than Victor at the time. I was, although he did it before I did. And so I got to see how the world around me reacted to my expression of these ambitions. And all I can say is the fact that I wanted to be a scientist and astrophysicist was hands down the path of most resistance through the forces of nature, in forces of society. Anytime I express this interest, teachers say, don't you want to be an athlete? Or don't you want to? I want to become something that was outside of the paradigms of expectation of the people in power. And so fortunately, my depth of interest in the universe was so deep and so fuel enriched that every one of these curveballs that I was thrown in, fences built in front of me and hills that I had to climb, I just reached for more fuel and I kept going. Now here I am, one of the most visible scientists in the land, and I want to look behind me and say, well, where are the others who might have been this? And they're not there. And I wonder what is the blood on the tracks that I happen to survive that others did not, simply because of the forces of society that prevented at every turn? So my life experience tells me that when you don't find blacks in the sciences, you don't find women in the sciences, I know that these forces are real, and I had to survive them in order to get where I am today. So before we start talking about genetic differences, you got to come up with a system where there's equal opportunity. Then we can have that conversation.